Hey guys, welcome back to Percussion Perspective. This is Kevin and Kevin alone. Remy has lost his voice and we got an episode coming out soon. So I am going to be doing a solo episode for you today. And I think Remy's going to do another solo episode on his own just to kind of see how we like those solo episodes. So today I am going to just simply talk about a couple of random topics that I think can still be entertaining, can still be educational, and just be good information for you guys. So a couple things that I'm going to talk about in this episode is, number one, I'm going to talk about an app, if I want to use proper grammar, an app that recently came out that I think will be really, really beneficial for students, teachers, musicians, really anyone that wants to get better at reading and playing rhythm. So we're going to talk about that. And then I'm also just going to talk about some random reflections on kind of my last year of teaching, not my last year, but my previous year of teaching. That kind of made it sound like it was my last year, but it's not. So just some reflections, maybe just some random things that I have figured out or thought of to make my life easier, to make my students' lives easier, to make teaching more enjoyable, any kind of just random tips like that that I have reflected upon. So I hope you enjoy this style of episode where it's just me talking, just one of us talking the whole time instead of it being a conversation. So let us know if you do enjoy this style of podcast. So let's jump right into it. The app that I wanted to speak to you guys about today is called Rhythm Generator. And if you follow me on Instagram or TikTok or YouTube, I post a lot of reels. And most recently, I've posted a lot, probably about the last couple of months, using this app, using this Rhythm Generator app. And I had the privilege of helping the developer of this app just kind of develop it, not in any of the smart coding ways, but just as a user, as a percussionist who deals with rhythms on a daily basis. So that's been really cool. I've been helping him over the last couple of months just develop it and using some of the verbiage in the app and the rhythm combinations and some of the different levels and stuff like that. And it's been really cool to be able to use that. And I've used it in my classrooms and stuff like that. And my kids are really enjoying it. And I'm enjoying using it in the classroom as well as using it to make videos and educational stuff and stuff like that. So again, it's called Rhythm Generator, and it is really focused on students, teachers, musicians, maybe not even a musician, somebody that is just now getting started and wanting to read and play rhythms better. That's who it's for. I'm going to talk about a couple of the settings and stuff like that I think make it really beneficial. The thing I really like about it right off the bat is how simple it is. I think that I actually haven't really messed with other apps that are supposed to be similar to this, but I like how simple it is. You just get on there and immediately can just start playing rhythms, and I like the random aspect of it. So if you're listening and you're a high school percussionist and you have to sight read for your all-state or your all-region auditions, it's a really good tool to help you get better at sight reading. So that's one thing I really like about it. But it comes with 8 preset difficulty levels. So if you're someone who just kind of wants to start like level 1, I think it just starts with like quarter notes and eighth notes. So you can jump on with that. And then as you go down the levels and get all the way to 8, it just adds more common difficult rhythm. So I think level 2 adds 16th notes. Level 3, I think, adds triplets. And then it kind of just goes on in there and adds more common 16th and 8th note combinations and just makes it harder and harder. It also has a custom setting on there. So if you don't want to focus on just those 8 that are provided, you can go into the settings a little bit deeper and you can pick exactly what the rhythms that you want That was not proper English. You can pick the rhythms that you want to be in there. So let's say you're a teacher and you are starting to learn about triplets. You're starting to teach your students about triplets. I'm sorry. You can go in there. You can select everything they already know how to play. And then you can also pop in triplets and it will just randomize all of those exercises for you. So it really just, you know, like within seconds, you have a bunch of exercises that your students can use to get better at those rhythms. So not just sight reading, but also just randomizing rhythms and kind of keeping them on their toes. And I think that's a really cool aspect. And you can do that with any of them. So me and the developer and probably some other people also kind of just figured out all of the rhythm combinations that people would want, especially the most common ones. And you can just pop those in there and really get focused practicing on a rhythm that you might not be good at or that you just want to get really solid at. So that's a really cool aspect of it, is just the customization. Rhythm Generator comes with three kind of default playing settings, I guess you could call them. The first one is default. So this is kind of like what you're going to use when you come into the app and you're deciding like what you want to use it for that day. So default would just be like you are just sight reading the heck out of it. So it's not going to play it for you, and it's not going to give you a chance. It's just literally going to play the rhythm. So I think a really cool thing is you can just hop on there, select how many measures you want to play, and it'll just go nonstop until you tell it to stop, basically. So that's default. Read first, which I think is most common to sight reading, is it's going to play it basically two times. The first one is going to be silent, where you're going to play it first, and then it's going to play it again, and it's going to actually play it for you. So you're going to hear like the MIDI playback of what that rhythm was, and then you can kind of see if you got it right. So you're going to play it, and then it's going to play it back. The most common setting that I like is listen first, which is also kind of known as echo playing. And it's probably going to be the most common that a lot of people use this app for. It's definitely what I use to make a lot of my videos for on social media. So it's called listen first. I like to call it echo playing, but basically it's going to play the rhythm for you. And then it's going to still have the MET playing, and it's got a little red cursor that follows every single beat. So if it has four 16th notes, it's going to move four times across those 16th notes to help you keep track of where you are. Really useful for young players or if you're learning a new rhythm. But listen first is like echo playing. It'll play it for you, and then you play it. So then you can kind of hear what it should sound like and then see if you can play it correctly. I think that's a really cool tool that a lot of people will use. It also has a mode called training mode. So basically you, let's say you're in like level two in the, not the random part, but just the regular level two reading. So that's going to include 16. So basically it's going to have a training mode that just has a line of quarters, a line of eighths, and a line of 16ths. And it's just going to rep through those. So you're training on those rhythms before you would kind of go back to the randomized setting where it's going to randomize the measures for you. So training mode, and then also the playing, the randomizing mode, which just gets you better at it before. So I think that's really cool too. And that goes all the way down to, you know, as far as you want to include all of the difficult rhythms. And you, so you train them before you can make them in the randomized mode. So that's really cool. Another thing that the developer's done is made it where you can print a PDF of this. So this is still in a working progress as far as I'm aware. But you know, let's say you put a bunch of measures on there. Eventually, you can print it off and, you know, save that and be able to send it to your kids or print it off and give it to them. And it's just another way for them to have like a concrete thing to practice. It's just another, you know, educational tool. But I think being able to print off whatever you're listening to is useful also. There's a lot of customization in the settings too. Obviously, you're changing the tempo, so you can go really slow or really fast whenever you're ready to. You can change the sound of the metronome. You can change the sound of the rhythm playback. So like what the rhythm is playing for you. It can be a snare drum. It can be a practice pad. It can be a bongo. It can be a hi-hat crash. There's a lot of sound settings in there. I kind of like to use the snare drum or the practice pad. And it's got a lot of them. And you can change the volumes of everything too. So if you want the metronome to be super loud or super soft, you can change that. You can change the playback sound. You can also have a sound if you want, like every new measure can have a sound effect that hits also. I don't personally use that, but it's there if you want it. So lots of customization options there. You can also decide how many times that the app will play through that measure before it randomizes again, which I think is cool. So if you wanted to like really solidify something, you could hear it four times, then it would randomize a new one. So lots of really cool settings in there. And I think once you find what you like, you can kind of keep it there, or you can, you know, move around from there also. It also has a light and a dark mode. I actually today was using it with my seventh graders, and one kid was like, it's kind of hard to see. And I was like, okay. So we tried the dark mode, and they were like, oh. So they thought that was really cool. So depending upon your eyes, it has a cool dark mode that kind of makes it look a little bit different, a little more cool. One cool thing I like also is you can change whether it highlights just a note or it highlights the whole measure as you're playing it. Just some more customizations there. I really like the little red, marker, I guess you could call it, that moves along with every single note. It makes it really cool for your students to keep track or for you to keep track, but also for videos. If you like to post a bunch of educational videos for rhythms or playing or whatever, that's a really cool educational tool that it has too. And I really like that. I don't personally use the measure marker, but I do like the one that highlights the notes. And you can also change how many measures. So I think it goes all the way up to 24. I could be wrong with that. But let's say you kind of want to sight read like a really long chunk of music without any help, like without it playing it for you. Just go to that default thing. You know, you can click 24 measures and it'll just scroll down the page all the way until it's done. Or it could just repeat a whole new set. So you honestly could just continue sight reading on this app until your phone died, and it would just keep randomizing different ones. And that's really the cool thing I like about it, is that it's completely random every time. It's pretty rare that it would kind of show you the exact same measure again, but it could also. But my students love it so far. They kind of see it as more of a game, which I like it, because kids are, they're so used to reels and TikToks where they can watch something for 15 seconds and then swipe and it's the next thing. So this is kind of like a way for their attention spans to still be activated, I guess you could say, but they're learning, and they're learning how to play better and read music better, and, you know, benefiting your band program by still entertaining their short attention span. So I really like that. My kids kind of think of it more as a game, and it's just really cool. And so I think it's definitely something to check out. And I've had a couple of my students already download it and are loving it. So that's really all I wanted to talk about with that app today. Again, it's called Rhythm Generator. And for the listeners of the podcast, if you go to rhythmgenerator.com/PP for percussion perspective, rhythmgenerator.com/PP, you can get a free month of Rhythm Generator Pro. So the app itself is free to download, but it is limited in what you can really do. There is some free stuff where you can go do a couple of levels, and it kind of limited on your playback. But I think the price for a full year of using this app is extremely worth it, especially if you are an educator who is going to use this all the time, or if you're someone like me who likes to make a lot of videos and post educational videos using it. It's definitely, definitely worth it. So again, you can go into the app and try a lot of its features for free. But if you want to get an entire month of Rhythm Generator Pro, go to rhythmgenerator.com/PP for a free month of Rhythm Generator Pro. And I will link that in the description as well. rhythmgenerator.com/PP. All right, and welcome back. So this next chunk of the episode, I wanted to just do some reflections on this past year of teaching and just talk about a couple of random snippets, random thoughts of things that I have kind of thought of or figured out that may benefit you guys. So there's just a couple of bullet points I'm just going to talk about. So the first one is that Yeah, I'm going to talk about method books for a minute. I have kind of figured out that method books can kind of be extremely useful, but at the same time can kind of also kind of be annoying. I'm just going to be a little blunt about it. So I don't think that there is one method book that works for everything that you need. Now, I am speaking from the perspective of a percussionist who gets to teach percussion class, right? So a lot of people who are band directors, maybe you're not a percussionist and you are teaching beginning percussion. So I think in that case, yes, a method book can be extremely useful. The things that I don't find as useful in a method book are, you know, for me at least, all the pictures. And there's a lot of pictures. There's a lot of unnecessary wordage in a method book that I just don't find that necessary. And I find it to be almost more distracting than useful. But on the other hand, if I was a percussionist and I had to jump in and teach beginning flute, then I think that method book would be really necessary for me because it would have pictures and words that I would probably need to teach the flute. But I think for our flute players at my school, you are extremely lucky that you do not have me as a flute teacher because I would not be good at it. But so basically, don't feel bad if you're not liking your method book. And I think that if you don't like your method book, then try to figure out a way to find your own materials that your students can get, which kind of leads me to my second bullet point. I'm going to kind of combine them a little bit. But especially in beginning band, but I'm kind of talking specifically beginning percussion, I recommend finding exactly down to the last piece of paper. Find exactly what you want your kids to be able to know by the end of that year. And that's the only thing that you have prepared to give them, which is why I think method books can kind of get in the way. And so my point is, I have had many years in the past. This is my 11th year, and I'm kind of just now, you know, realizing this because no one really taught me this or put this in my head. But I think that in beginning band or beginning percussion, it's incredibly important that you get as much information to these kids as possible. And you're always going to be, you know, stumped with time by the end. You're going to be preparing for concerts, doing solos, doing band trips, all those random things, especially if you're someone who teaches high school all the way down to sixth grade. You're going to be gone for contests. You're going to be doing other things. You're going to run out of time. And so the time that you have with them is really, really vital. And so you don't want to waste any time teaching anything that is a waste of time or it's not something that you 100% want them to know. And so that's why I think method books can get in the way. So what I would recommend is, you know, if you use rhythm charts or if you use maybe something from a different method book and then something else from a different method book, that's okay. Your students do not have to necessarily have a method book. I think that if you have dialed down exactly what you want your kids to know and what you want to teach them, that's okay. There's plenty of resources out there that you can use that aren't necessarily a method book. And I'm not bashing any method books. The method books that I currently use are great. I just think that they can somehow or sometimes be a little unnecessary with all of the extra material that just isn't quite as useful. Because I find that we don't end up getting through the method book, but they still know the information because I have found other ways to get that information to them, if that makes any sense. So again, especially if you are a first year or a first, second, third year teacher, and you're still trying to figure this out, I think it's really beneficial to just sit down and find time to really compile exactly what you want your kids to know. And I think it'll help you in the long run when you're in the middle of the year and you're thinking, okay, I've taught them this and this and this, and what do I need to teach next? What do I need to teach next? Just look in your folder, look in your binder, and it's right there, and you know what you're going to teach them. So, and that can be tweaked every year, obviously. I am in no way perfect. I'm not saying that I know the answers to everything, but I think that if you're going into your next year and you know exactly what you want to teach them in the order that you want to teach it, I think you're going to be set up for success a little bit better and feel less nervous or anxious about what you're going to teach them next. Moving right along. The next thing I want to talk about, this is kind of percussion specific, but I spent too many years without doing this. And I think it's kind of I'm realizing that by doing it, my kids are way better. But this bullet point is teach those rudiments to your kids. And this goes for non-percussionists too, but your students need to understand what rudiments are and how to play them, because as they get into eighth grade, ninth grade, especially into high school, a lot of the music they play, whether it's a solo, sometimes in concert band music, and mostly in marching band, they need to understand what's in their music, because I think I end up having kids who, you know, in the past when they get into high school, it's like, oh, those are flam accents, but they don't really know what they are, or it's their first time really seeing them, and that shouldn't be the case. I like to explain to my young kids that rudiments are essentially words that we use to then create sentences, and so they are musical words that we use to create musical phrases. You know, just like on mallet instruments, like knowing the notes, right? Knowing the stickings and all that stuff. Not the best example, but you get what I'm saying. So they need to understand right off the bat what a paradiddle is. Double paradiddle, paradiddle-diddle. They need to know some of the basic flam rudiments, you know, just flams, alternating flams, flam accents, flam taps, all of those things. If they don't know what those are by the time they get into those upper junior high levels, then they're just not as prepared to look at music and know what they are and be able to play them. It's kind of like waiting till they need to know something to teach it to them can cause just more issues down the road. So spend time with your kids introducing rhythms. It should be part of your curriculum. It should be part of your, like, if just like you spend time talking about, let's say tambourine, you need to also spend time talking about all of the rudiments that you need kids to know. So, not saying you have to get to all of them, but I think it's important that you are at least putting a name to these rudiments, and so that they know what they are. And I would say try to do this as early as you can, especially in seventh grade. I feel like I've thrown a lot of rudiments to these kids over this last year, and they're going to just be smarter. And I think that they can learn other things faster by just knowing these rudiments. They'll have stronger hands and they'll have stronger brains or smarter brains, and they'll just be able to learn music faster because they know what those rudiments are. My next bullet point, and I know I said this was going to be mostly percussion specific, but this is a percussion podcast. So this is a little tip that I figured out. I kind of just happened upon this year, and I think it's going to make a big difference. So for percussion specifically, when you are starting a new concert series, so for instance, for me in my class, we just kind of finished, and I'm talking seventh grade specifically, but this is really good for sixth grade as well. We just finished like contest a couple of weeks ago, like our regular district state contest, whatever you want to call it. And after that, what do we normally do? We're going to kind of probably pass out new music for the end of the year concert. So what I like to do is give every kid a copy of all of the percussion parts. So kind of, and actually my seventh grade director, Mary, is actually the person that did this in my beginning percussion class. And I didn't even ask her to, but she copied all of the percussion parts. So the snare drum, bass drum, percussion two, timpani, mallets, whatever, all into one packet. And every kid got a copy of every single part. Sorry for that voice crack. Every kid got every single part. And what we do right off the bat, every time we listen to it and we go and get on a mallet instrument. So every kid is going to learn the mallet part. Now, this might not be, you know, realistic for some of you. I am blessed in a way that I have a mallet room with a bunch of keyboards set up, and my kids can just walk on them and play them. So what this does is it does a couple things. Number one, it gets them automatically starting to hear the melody of the song on their instrument. So I think a lot of kids like to be able to be like, oh, I know that melody, and they can play it. And then second, it gets them more comfortable just starting to learn the mallet part. I think that, you know, let's say I'm going to switch gears to like beginning band for a second. Let's say, you know, we're going to be playing three pieces for our beginning band concert, and I have 18 beginners. And so let's say each kid may only play mallets on one piece. I would rather use these three concert pieces as curriculum for mallets. And so what I will do is I will pass out all those parts, and then before we start learning any other instrument of the piece, we don't start learning snare drum or whatever, we will go to the mallet instruments, and we will learn the entire mallet part as an entire class. All 18 of those kids will play the mallet parts of all three pieces. And I think right there, that means that all those kids are going to leave that year having played the mallet part. Now, they maybe didn't play it. Obviously, they're not going to play it at the concert, but they at least can play it. And that's more mallet stuff that they've done. So let's say they only, you know, if I didn't do that, then each kid would only play one mallet piece. And I think that that is not as valuable as them getting to play all of them, right? So I also utilize recordings. So I think that for those kids who are learning the mallet parts, it's a lot more fun to learn a mallet part if they can hear what the rest of the band is doing. So I will go onto whatever the website is, probably JW Pepper, wherever the recording is, and I will screen record the recording, the entire recording of the piece. Takes a minute and a half to 2 minutes. I will then put that into GarageBand, and then there is a, you know, there's a little link there that you can click it, and it will adjust the song if you change the tempo. So then if, as we're learning the piece, I might slow it down by 20, 30 clicks. And then they're learning it, and they're automatically applying what they're learning to the piece itself, which I think makes it a lot more exciting. Instead of us just hitting the notes, they can hear the snare drum part. They can hear the timpani part. They can hear the trumpets and the flutes, and they can start hearing, oh, my part actually matches the flute and the clarinet, or, oh, right there, I can hear the timpani part, and it's with the tuba, or whatever. Who knows if they're actually hearing all of that, but sometimes I'll kind of point that out to them, and they're like, oh, and it just makes the whole experience of learning the part a little bit more exciting. And so, and that's just, that doesn't take me very long to record that, and then pop it into GarageBand, and then what that does is when all those kids know those parts, when I actually assign it to them, I end up having kids who get bummed by if they don't get that mallet part that they liked, which is like, that's pretty rare in the percussion world, especially in middle school. They always want to play snare, or they want to play timpani, or they want to play a drum of some kind. So it's pretty cool when they get a little bummed for not getting the mallet part. But then when we're starting to put all those pieces together, like we're putting the mallet part with the timpani part, with the tambourine and the cymbals and the snare and the bass, when we're putting all those accessories together, we're not waiting on the mallet player to know their music. It's really simple for them to just incorporate. It's like they already know it, and so we can just incorporate all of it together, because we all know it takes the mallet player, in the percussion world, it takes the mallet player the longest to get through their music, especially if it's tricky, and especially if maybe you haven't gotten to some of those notes that are in that piece. Because a lot of times those beginning band pieces can be like the flute part kind of doubled or you know, copy and pasted, and maybe it's really high, or maybe it's really low, or maybe there's a lot of jumps in there or accidentals that you haven't got to. That's why I think it's really important to use as your curriculum, because then you can utilize that piece, and they can learn, you know, a new key signature, or they can learn what an accidental is, or they can learn how to roll, or whatever it is. So, and then, like I said, when you're putting the pieces together, you're not waiting on the mallet part to get down. You're then maybe waiting on rhythms of another thing, or tambourine technique, or timpani tuning, or something like that. So, I think, again, those kids just as much mallet reading as they can possibly do, is what is going to make them better at reading mallets. So I'm going to continue doing that into next year and just kind of see if that actually made a difference. But I think as long as the culture is kind of set at, of like, okay, new music, everybody get on mallets, we're going to learn the mallet part together, it'll make it more fun. And I think it makes those mallet players not feel like they are kind of the outcast, because they kind of, in the world of percussion, if we're rehearsing those pieces, you've got all these drums and accessories, and then the mallet player kind of feels like they're not part of that. But if they already know it, I think it just makes it a little bit easier. So definitely try that if you have the, you know, the situation where you can do that. If you have, you know, if you're someone who teaches band all together and you have enough mallet instruments, I would definitely just spend the first day or 2 days, put all those kids on the mallet part. Because then I think you can teach that a little bit better, because those kids are going to be playing a lot of the same parts as the winds are, or something like that. So give that a try. When my middle school director, Mary, gave me those, I was like, oh, this is going to be a really cool idea. And then using the recordings changed it too. So that's just a quick tip. That wasn't quick at all, but you get what I'm saying. My last little snippet. I'm sure I've been talking really fast and you're probably sick of hearing just my voice. That'd be really funny if kind of Remy just popped up out of nowhere and he just sat there for 30 minutes waiting to say something. But anyway, my last bullet point is when your kids are deciding to be in band again, I think it's really important that you start focusing on their strengths and their weaknesses. But the point here is not all your kids, mostly I'm talking percussion again, not all your kids are going to be able to play everything. So by the time you get these kids are in like eighth grade, you're going to know your kids and you're going to know what they can play and what they can't. You know, I have some kids in my high school band right now who are just not going to thrive as really good snare drum players. And that's okay. You're also going to maybe have kids who are not going to thrive as really good bass drum players. Like they just don't keep that solid time like you need. Or kids who aren't going to be able to figure out how to tune. Or kids who just can't get four mallets down. You know, you're going to have kids in all of those spectrums of different things that they just aren't going to be good at. So know your kids and help them be the best that they can be. And I think when this leads into like solo time, like I kind of look at solo time as like, and solo ensemble is what I'm talking about, but solo time being able to let those kids really show off. So let your kids pick what instrument they want to play a solo on, especially if you know that they are not going to end up being like a hot shot four mallet marimba player. Maybe they don't need to go down the path of really hard four mallet material, but they can go down the path of really cool timpani solo or something like that. Also, if you know that you have a kid who can't be in the band building to practice on a marimba, don't give him a marimba solo. I have a kid this year who I think I kind of failed him as a teacher because I gave him a really hard marimba solo knowing that he was an extreme, probably my busiest kid that I have. He's in a bunch of other activities and I knew that he wouldn't have time, or I should have known. My foreshadowing did not help me there, but I should have known that he would not be able to be on a marimba that often. So I should have given him like a timpani solo, a really hard timpani fun timpani solo, or a cool snare drum solo or something like that. So help set your percussionist up for success, and don't just like you can't treat every kid like they're on the same path. You kind of have to really utilize all their strengths. You can still acknowledge their weaknesses, but just kind of know where they're going to be having more fun and having the best use of their time, and also how are they going to benefit your band program the most. So that those are just a little bit of reflections that I have kind of recently had this year. Hopefully those are in some way beneficial to you, and I did not just throw out a bunch of info that was stupid and not worth listening to. So go get Rhythm Generator. That is the main goal there. So again, last time I'll say it, rhythmgenerator.com/PP for a free month of that. And I hope that you enjoyed this episode. We will see you on the next one. Thank you.